Well, it's good to be with you guys again. We love this church, love you folks. And it's been the quiet time sharing that Andy started us off with of the music was like so appropriate for what God has laid out my heart. Sometimes I wonder, how does this possibly happen? But the quiet time is just is going to be a great introduction to what we're going to look at this morning. So that just does my heart good. And then the music this morning, I love the songs and the setting, the group that you put together for us today. I sometimes think we don't have a clue when we get to heaven just how exciting and how vibrant, how emotional it's going to be. And, that first song especially really got our heart into it real quickly. So great, great time. Well, we're I wouldn't say weary. We had 3 Nerf Wars this week, Thursday night, Friday night, and yesterday. Two were in the same place, Friday night and Saturday, but Thursday was a new church to us for Nerf Wars. And a very, very busy time. We picked up so many Nerf darts and Nerf balls. It's like, okay. So yesterday was the 20th. We parked the trailer because we're done with Nerf season. And we almost wanted to have a ceremony last night when we put the trailer away. So it'll come back out for reverb because we use all that. Actually, all of that stuff, a whole trailer full of stuff, gets divided up between 3 locations. We have enough bunkers for 3 places. So it'll come back out, but may not be till then. So anyway, November 7th, unless I have a mental breakdown and accept another one somewhere. So we actually, Thursday night was not on the list, was not on the calendar. And my wife looked at me, she's like, how did Thursday happen? Well, somebody twisted my arm and I said, yeah, we actually do have Thursday night open. So they wanted to do it next year. And they said, actually, you could try it this year. So we added one in Corfu. And it went really, really well. How many decisions was there Thursday night? Do you?
I think eight
decisions for Christ Thursday night. Friday and Saturday are 2 of the toughest ones we do. I better not tell you where. But they bring in kids from the projects, and it's just a rough group. In fact, you have no trouble convincing this particular group that they are sinners. They could share with you just exactly how they know that. Friday night, we had 17 kids respond to the gospel. Just an amazing time. There were a lot of kids there. And then yesterday, we had 8 more of a different age group, same church. And it just does your heart so good. Even though you're kind of weary from the events, to see those kids respond to the gospel just really fills your heart with praise. I got done with the message, and one little boy, I could still see his face, one little black boy come up to me, and he said, "Great message, Mr. Whitney." It's like, it was an adult. This was a little kid about half my size that just really did my heart good. And was fun to see that. So anyway, thank you for praying for us. We will now, actually my wife has already been working on reverb. She started in January calling all the vendors. And so now we will start picking up the pace with that. And we're praying for 2,400 people this year at the Rochester Reverb. For the 3rd year, we've been the largest one. I don't know how much longer we can stay in that position, that ranking, but more people does mean more people here in the Gospels. We're going to keep trying to keep growing that event, so pray for us. I am in Numbers chapter 13 and 14, if you would join me there, Numbers chapter 13 and 14. And this is a passage that has over the years, and I'll explain more later, but God has really used to speak to my heart. This is a very tender passage for me, and there's reasons for that. But when I said the quiet time sharing this morning, it really sets the background to this. It really does, because as you know in the quiet time passage, God has told a man to go before Pharaoh and to tell him to let my people go. Speaking of God's people, the Hebrew nation was in Egypt. And Pharaoh didn't exactly really want to be the person to go before Pharaoh. I'm sure you caught that when God told him to go. And Pharaoh was the authority that had, I mean, complete authority. If Pharaoh didn't like you, and he didn't even like the way, the mannerism in that you came into his presence, he could just tell his soldiers to cut off your head. I mean, he had that kind of authority, a little different today. But and Moses really didn't want to be the person to go before Pharaoh. As you remember the excuses he made, you remember at the burning bush, he turns aside because it wasn't that unusual for a bush to catch fire, somewhat unusual, but that happened in the desert. What was unusual is that it didn't burn up. It just kept burning. It says he turned aside to see what's up with this. And of course, as he drew near, God told him to take off his shoes because this was holy ground. Anytime, any place where God is, it's holy ground. And so he does, and God begins to speak to him that you're going to go before Pharaoh. Well, remember the excuses Moses, he said, well, I don't really speak well. You know, like, I'm not really your person. God says you are. And he says, you know, take Aaron. He'll speak for you. And he made a number of other excuses. I think I've made every one of those excuses as God was calling us into ministry one day. And so I can really identify with Moses. And in fact, the last thing is Moses really says, I really don't have any inclination to go. Would you just send somebody else? And at that point, God starts to get a little angry with Moses, like, you will go. And this is after he showed him the signs where he threw down his, you know, remember he threw down his rod, it became a snake, and all the different things God did, and to show him that you will go, and I will go with you. So, of course, Pharaoh, you know, decides to let him go several times, changes his mind. You remember how the whole thing goes. And in fact, I asked the kids at Nerf Wars this last week, what were some of the plagues? One boy says, I could tell you every one of the 10 plagues. He said, can I? And I said, well, we really don't have time. But I said, another time you can, but that's impressive. And the last of the plague, the killing of the firstborn, was the roughest. And Pharaoh finally says, get out of here, go. And of course, you know Pharaoh changed his mind. But in all of that, God showed how powerful he was and how powerless the gods of the Egyptians were. It's really what he was showing them. God showed incredible, amazing power that they say 600,000 men. Well, if you add the women and children, I don't know why they only counted the men in that day, but it was 600,000 men. So if you add the women and children, it had to be at least 2 million people that Moses led out of Egypt. They walked out of Egypt. All the slave laborers that was building his kingdom. What amazing power God has in our life if we would just believe him and just trust him. And you know the story, Moses leads him into the wilderness, and it's just a great experience, right? Well, not exactly. And Andy touched on this. What they weren't very long in the wilderness, and what did they start to do? And complain and murmur. Even the word murmur sounds like kind of grumbling, doesn't it? They started to complain. And why did they complain? Well, they got hungry. I'm sure 2 million people did get hungry. They got thirsty, and I'm sure 2 million people got thirsty. That in itself wasn't the worst part of it. I mean, but what should they have done? They're in the wilderness. They just saw a nation of 2 million people walk out of Egypt. And there was so much more to the story. There was, remember the cloud of the pillar, the cloud and the pillar of fire, that's how God led them and protected them at the same time from before and behind. I mean, God showed how powerful he was. So when you got hungry, I mean, I even asked the kids that last week because it led into our salvation message with the kids. But even with all of that, they saw what God did. So all they had to do, if they didn't feel they could pray directly, but what did they do most of the time? They went and told Moses, because Moses was the man who really prayed to God. And it's like God did almost everything that Moses asked. You see constantly Moses going before God and God giving them water, he gave them manna. Of course, one of the dumbest things they did was to say, would to God that we die here in the wilderness, or go back to, actually they wanted to go back to Egypt, where they had been fed, but where they were slaves in bondage. And they said something really horrible. They said, "And we hate this worthless food." That's literally what the scriptures say. The children of Israel said, "We hate this food that you have provided." That was the wrong thing to say. And I could go more into that. That was a lot of our message with the kids this last week. So we pick it up in Numbers chapter 13 and chapter 14. And I think one of the greatest Old Testament stories, and the reason why I say what Andy shared with us this morning has just laid such a great background, because one of the greatest stories in the Old Testament was when God delivered his chosen people from Egypt, and he gave them the promised land. He said, "It's yours, just go take it. It's yours for the taking." God called up Moses, raised him up. But I think the greatest mistake in history is when the children of Israel missed out on what I think was the greatest blessing in all the world that was right before them for their taking. All they had to do was possess it. He said, "It's yours. Just go take it." And I think it's the greatest mistake ever committed. Probably the greatest blessing was the deliverance of the Israelites. And you'll read that all through scriptures. It'll make reference to them leaving the land of Egypt, God delivering them. But the greatest mistake was not following through and believing that God would take care of them. All they had to do is say to Moses, "Ask God to do this." And he would have done it. He would have given them food, would have given them water. In fact, he did. Numbers chapter 13, we're at that place in Kadesh Barnea. And this is a very, God has really used this in my life. They're at the point of being at Kadesh Barnea. And it says in first chapter 13, verse 1, "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Send thou men that they may search the land of Canaan," because they're here, they're there, "which I gave unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers shall you send a man, every one a ruler among them." And Moses, by the commandment of the Lord, sent them from the wilderness of Paran. All those men were heads of the children of Israel. Now, I've of course, spent many hours in reading a lot of stuff and studying this. It says he sent men that were rulers, they were the heads. I don't think it was the one who was literally the head of each tribe. Those were probably older men. That was assigned to each tribe, was the head of each tribe. I kind of suspect that was older men. It probably wasn't this 12 spies. Probably the 12 spies were not literally the head of that group, because they wouldn't have been gone for 40 days. The head would have needed to be there. But they were apparently very highly respected men who were leaders amongst that tribe. And probably, and I don't need to mean to pick on us older people, but they were probably younger people who were like mountain climbers, because they were going to have to climb a mountain. In fact, they were going to be gone, I think it was 40 days. So these would have been robust men, probably not like me at this stage in life, or maybe not David, but it might be John. Well, maybe not even John right now with your bum leg. You probably would have got left there. But anyway, it would have been somebody probably like Matt, or Matt or Andy, or I don't know, somebody young and robust and active and healthy and ready to go. So, but they were apparently men who were respected to carry out this assignment. They were sent to spy out the land. Now, don't you pick on Andy. I see some of you behind him. Anyway, so yes, I got you, brother. I'm here with you. So these were men that were sent out to spy out this land. And I won't read all of these verses, but it's verse 4, it says, "And these were their names of the tribe of Reuben and Shemau," and that goes on. So all of those verses 4 through about 17 there were the names. Now, I'm not even sure I can pronounce. That's one reason why I'm not reading. I'm not sure I can pronounce all of them. But you could read them. I usually just say the first letter. Benjamin I can read, but some of those are different. But anyway, here is Kadesh on the border of Canaan. And this crisis is perhaps the greatest mistake the Israelites made because of their actions and what they implied. The opportunity before the Jewish nation was to take possession of this land. Now, why were these men sent out. They were sent out to spy out the land. And so if you happen to be following in the notes and you're looking at the insert, it's okay if you're not, but I think this was, as I put here, the greatest test in all the world. Because these men were given an assignment, these 12 men. This assignment is going to make a difference in the lives of all these 2 million people. And especially the kids, the children, who are going to have to bear the consequences of how their parents handled this assignment. And so in my notes there, I have these, they're just some minor points. We're going to read a lot of verses, but in minor points, the first thing you're going to see is a collection of reports. Because in verse 18, it says, or actually in verse 16, it says, these are the names of the men which Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Jehoshua. And Moses sent unto them to spy out the land of Canaan and said unto them, get you up this way southward and go up into the mountain. And this is what they were assigned to do. And see the land, which it is. Now you think about what all this implies. See the land, which it is, and the people that dwelleth therein, whether they be strong or weak, few or many. Verse 19, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that they dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds. Now think about that. What's that talking about? Are they just kind of like travelers traveling through, you know, nomads just in tents, or are these established places that would be hard to conquer? Verse 20, and what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, well, you can kind of figure that out. You know, is this a productive agricultural area or kind of pathetic? Whether there be wood therein or not, and I'm sure they needed the wood for, you know, obviously for building, but also for sacrificing, for sacrifices, for heating perhaps, cooking. So what kind of, you know, what is the land like? You know, what is the woods there like? And be ye of good courage, and bring of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. And so Kadesh, here we are at Kadesh Barnea on the border of Canaan. A consideration for every believer. Canaan, I think, is a picture. Some people say, well, Canaan's a picture of heaven. I don't think so. But I do think it's a picture of our inheritance, what we have because of being in Christ. The abundant life that God wants every single one of us to have, a life of trust, not a life of controversy and doubting. And so you follow the story. You see a collection of reports because Moses told him, I want you to go and check this out, spy out the land. I want you to come back and give a report. And you see that report start to unfold in verse 27. And there I see a confirmation of blessing. And they told him and said, We came unto the land whither thou sentest. When they come back, apparently they gather Moses. I mean, you got to understand, after, I think it was 40 days, if I remember right, they come back. And if you can imagine, you see these 12 spies coming back. You remember they were carrying grapes? This was so abundant that they put them on a pole and two men had to carry them. I would like to try those grapes. I love grapes. But so you see these men coming back and they're carrying the fruit of the land. And so we can't wait to hear what they have to say, right? They're going to come back. They're going to give a report. So it says that Moses gathers and all the tribes. I mean, this is like a celebration. This would be like somebody winning the Super Bowl and they come back to town and you give a parade for them. And that actually could happen someday here in Buffalo. I hope it does. Maybe next year, who knows. But this is about to be an amazing report. And so they come back. In verse 23, it says, and they came unto the brook of Eshcol and cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grapes, and they bare it between two upon a staff, and they brought of the pomegranates and the figs, and the place was called the brook Eshcol because of the cluster of grapes in which the children of Israel cut down from thence. So actually, verse 29 says, and they returned after searching out the land. And verse 26, Moses and all the people gathered to hear this report. Verse 27, they told him, you sent us, we went, we come back. And yes, it is a land that floweth with milk and honey. And this is the fruit of it. Now, when it says it floweth with milk and honey, it's just talking about this was a very productive land. You can't believe what you can grow there. And it's everything that, you know, if you want to call something the promised land, this was it. This is like unbelievable dream come true. And I like that. But then the conversation turns. And at this point, I think it gets a little ugly. Probably not quite what Moses was expecting. Verse 28, what is the first word there? At least in my, I don't know what your version says. Mine says, nevertheless. That should scare you right there. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And worse, yeah, moreover, we saw the children of Anak there, apparently a really large people. In verse 29, then you get into all the Kites and the Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites. They dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. I'm sure these 12 men that were sent to spy out the land had to do it in a very clandestine way because they couldn't be discovered. But this is what they saw. And so that conversation turns. And not quite so positive anymore. In fact, the crisis grows that when they bring up the Amalekites and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites and the Canaanites. But truth speaks, and I love this part, because it says, and Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once. I mean, not, you know, eventually. Let us go right away and possess it. And what does he say? For we are well able to go up and to overcome it. We got this. God has this. But I have in my notes here just little sublines of trouble brews. Because in verse 31 it said, but the men that went up with him. Now, who were the men? It's the ones that I can't even say all their names. But it was the 10, right? Because only two had a positive report, Joshua and Caleb. And the other men said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And so they, you know, you talk about mob mentality, and that can happen. And so it says in verse 32, and they brought up an evil report of the land. Now, if I could ask you a question, what was about the report that made it evil? I mean, everything they said was probably true. I mean, it was, you know, yeah, it flows with milk and honey. This is a productive land. And there are cities, there are walls, there are people that are bigger than us, they're stronger than us. Probably that in itself was probably all true. I don't think that was the bad part about it. But the evil report is the way in which they said it. Because I think the greatest, what made this a sin and rebelliousness is that they didn't trust God to take them into that land. It was everything they said it was. That part was probably a true report. But what do you do with that? Okay, do you turn and get on your knees and say, God, we can't do this. They're bigger than us, but they're not bigger than you. And they brought up an evil report of the land which he had searched under the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it, it is a land that, but it eateth up the inhabitants thereof. And all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And you just see this total fear-mongering. And there we saw giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants, and we were in our own sight. That's the problem. We were grasshoppers. And so we were in their sight. So at Kadesh Barnea, something happened that'll go down in Israel's history to mark this as, I think, perhaps the greatest mistake a nation could ever be guilty of. And catch when this happened. This happened after They watched God take them straight out of Egypt. You think that wasn't a challenge? That wasn't a test? The nation of Egypt was using them as slaves. I think they forgot how hard that was. You remember when Moses first went to Pharaoh and said, you need to let my people go. And after several times going before Pharaoh decided that apparently they had too much time on their hands. So we're not only going to make them make brick, but we're not going to give them the straw anymore. They're going to have to get their own straw. And so from that, we have this phrase, more brick, less straw, when people keep putting more on you, but they expect you to just somehow do it all. They watched God deliver them. They watched God lead a nation of probably 2 million people. And so Moses sends these men out. And these men had a responsibility to come back with not only a report of the land, but they should have been men that trusted God to do this difficult thing. And I think that, in fact, so I got three things for you. Well, so what went wrong? Before I give them to you, I want to, let me just also preface it with this. I think God wanted him to be in this land with all his heart. I think, you know, sometimes we don't think about the emotional part of it because, you know, we're Baptists. We don't like to talk about emotions, but I believe with all my heart, God wanted him to go in this land so badly. Why did he bring him out of Egypt? To die in the wilderness? I mean, seriously? God went through all of this so they would just die and you know, not? They missed the greatest opportunity in the world. And I think God, with all his heart, wanted him to enjoy the best of life. This land was theirs. He promised it to them. So number one, they failed to see the big picture, and they doubted what God was capable of doing. God really wanted them to have that land, to be in possession of it. In fact, I could take you back. In fact, you don't have to turn there, but in Exodus chapter 3 is a story where it says, now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him out of in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire. The bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I'll turn aside and see why this bush hasn't burned up. But in that passage, that's the passage we're talking about, the Lord said to Moses, I've seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and I have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. God doesn't miss a thing. He knows where we're hurting and what we're dealing with every day, every single one of us. I would guess everyone in this room has something they're dealing with that you wish would either go away or God would help you work through. God sees it. And in the very next verse, after verse 8, it says, I am come down to deliver them out of the land of the Egyptians and to bring them out to the land, unto a good land and a large, and a land flowing with milk and honey. There's the promise and the place, and catch this, and the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. God knew they were all there. They knew they were all there. God told Moses, I'm giving you the land that belongs to all these people. And a few verses later is where he says, go and gather the elders of each Israel together and say unto them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has appeared unto me, saying, I have surely visited you, and I have seen what they have done to you in Egypt. And I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt. And again, he says, out of the land of the Canaanites and the Hivites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, unto a land flowing with milk and honey. Now that's in Exodus chapter 3. You jump ahead to Exodus chapter 6, and I'm going over this for a purpose. And I also have established my covenant with them. This was the covenant made to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob. To do what? To give them the land of Canaan, the land of their pilgrimage, wherein they were strangers. And I will bring you unto the land concerning the which I did swear to give to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, and I will give it to you as a heritage. The land is yours, and you are to just take it. Then you jump ahead from Exodus 6 to Exodus 13. Guess what it says? And it shall be when the Lord shall bring thee into the land of, guess what? The Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, which I have swore to give unto thy fathers, that to give it unto you. And then again, in Exodus, not only 13, but 33. And again, he says, the land that I swore to give to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob. And I will send an angel before thee, and I will drive out the Canaanites and the Amorites and the Hittites, and guess what? The Perizzites, something like that, and the Hivites and the Jebusites. Over and over and over again. The spies shouldn't have been surprised that there were Amorites and Jebusites and Hittites. I probably won't say them in order, but all of those ites. This was no surprise to God. He told them numerous times so that they wouldn't forget. In fact, you could jump all the way to Deuteronomy, where God reminded them when they broke camp at Mount Sinai that you see it again, the land of the Amorites and all of those. So, how tragic was this? It was really tragic because they did not believe that the God who took them out of Egypt for that reason couldn't fulfill that promise. And I think sometimes we make the same mistake. God has promised us so much. He really has. He has promised to take care of us. But I know when the crisis comes, sometimes we think somehow I'm different or the situation's different or time is different. It's the same God. He can take care of you, I promise you. And thankful for Caleb and Joshua, there were two that had a report. And I put down here in my notes that, I don't know if you knew this, but these spies traveled about 500 miles to perform this task. I can't even imagine that. I mean, I have a motorcycle, I have a car, I have a truck. I mean, I have a lot of ways I would like to make that trip. My ATV would even be fine. It would take me a while. But they didn't have all that. 500 miles. That's like unbelievable. But I also wrote in my notes, they knew the nations they would have to conquer. They knew it was a land that flowed with milk and honey. I'm really not even sure why they had to send spies out, because God had told them all that. They knew, but probably forgot, that God said he would give them the victory over those foes, but they doubted that God could do that. So that's point number one. That's the biggest point that I think we've got to take home from this, that we got to be careful that we don't fail to see the big picture. Because the greatest sin was all of that, was just not believing that God could do that. We have to move on. The next two points are not as long, but letter B I put in my notes. Not only did they fail to see the bigger picture, they doubted, but what did they do also with that doubt? And this is point number B. They discouraged others from believing and following God's commands. Those seeds of doubt took root, and that discouragement spread throughout the whole nation. And they say that bad news travels faster than good news can even get its boots on. That is so true. We've got to be careful that our question, I don't think it's wrong to ask questions, but just we got to be careful that our questions don't lead to doubt, and that doubt doesn't then go into rebellion, because that's a quality that God hates. And in fact, just to give you an example, do you remember when Moses' sister, not to pick on sisters, I have a couple, but do you remember when Moses' sister Miriam started to complain? Do you remember what her complaint was? Why does everything have to go through Moses? You know, why does he have to be the big guy? You know, it's like everything has to go through him. We got to get approval from Moses. Moses is the one that prays to God. He's got to make all the decisions. And it was wrong. Because what did God do with Miriam? Do you remember? Struck her with leprosy. Now that was like some pretty severe judgment. Can you imagine? I'm complaining about my brother. Well, her brother happened to be the God's man, so we do have to be careful with that, even if it is your brother. So, and God struck her with leprosy. Now what did Moses do? Do you remember? He prayed for her. You're exactly right. He prayed for her. Moses was moved. You know, Moses wasn't like this big shot who thought, okay, there you go. There you go, sis. How's that working for you? He didn't do that. He took it seriously and he prayed. He intervened just like he did for the nation of Israel numerous times. And he prayed, God, please take this away from her. And God did. He miraculously healed her. I have a feeling probably Miriam didn't complain nearly as much after that. I don't think I would. And that was pretty severe judgment. But it breaks my heart that these 10 men didn't realize the seriousness of what they were discouraging the people from doing, and that in trusting God. And that's where sometimes when God puts us in leadership, whatever that leadership happens to be, we've got to be very careful that our decisions, or maybe sometimes our lack of faith or lack of trust, doesn't discourage everybody else, because we're in a higher area of maybe of responsibility. We've got to be really careful. And they said they saw themselves as grasshoppers. Well, they said we were grasshoppers in our sight, and then they said, of course, in their sight as well. But they made a false assessment when they said, we are not able. That was totally wrong. And at that point, it becomes very dangerous because of what it identifies. If you would jump ahead with me, we've got to wrap things up. In Numbers chapter 14, I like this. In Numbers 14, and what it teaches me personally, it says in 14, and all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried. This was a long night. They wept all night because they realized the seriousness of what was about to happen. Verse 2, and all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness, and wherefore hath the Lord brought us into this land to fall by the sword, and our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt? And they said, it gets worse, verse 4, and they said to one another, let's make a captain, and let's return into Egypt. I wrote down, are you serious? God brought you out of Egypt. All that he did to get you out of there. And at this point, their attitude becomes very dangerous. And so I love what it says Moses and Aaron did. It's only godly leadership should do. They fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. And sometimes that's what we have to do, is just get on our knees and say, God, I don't know how to change this people, so it's going to have to be you. And verse 6 says, and Joshua's not done yet. It says, Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, they rent their clothes, and they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we pass through to search, it's an exceeding good land. So Joshua and Caleb are still trying to convince the people, don't do this, don't make this mistake, we can do this. I mean, you've come out of Egypt, we've got you this far, let's just keep going, don't turn back. And it says, and they spake unto all the company. Verse 8, if the Lord delight in us, and he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey, we're like that close. Let's go. Let's get it. Let's take it. Verse 9, only rebel not against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. But here's the tragic news, verse 10. But all the congregation bade stone them with stones, and the glory of the Lord. So they're about to stone them. So Moses and Aaron are the problem. let's just get rid of them, and everything's just going to be okay, right? I don't think so. And it says the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. This to me is like the time I remember I was sent to the principal's office. I know that happened at least once. And because discipline is ahead. And verse 11 says, the Lord said unto Moses, how long will this people provoke me? And how long will it be ere they believe me? That was the sin. How long before they believe me? For all the signs which I have showed unto them. Verse 12, and I will smite them with a pestilence and disinherit them. And catch this. I don't know if I ever saw this before, but this is I caught it this time. And I will make of thee a greater nation, mightier than they. Do you realize what God is willing to do? I've never caught this. He's saying, listen, I'll just start all over. I'll give you a nation. You'll still be, you know, you'll still have a great, because God promised, it's part of the covenant, that he would bless the seed of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. And I'm not sure what God had in mind there, but he's like, I'll just give you a new people. Whew. So what does Moses do? If it were not for Moses and his faithful interceding, God would have destroyed them. That's how serious that, that's the point I want to make. That's how serious that report was from those 12 spies, actually. Two did the right thing. 10 messed up big time. You know what I thought to myself, Andy? I couldn't tell you today the names of those 10 spies. I have no idea. We don't remember them. They're not important, apparently. But Joshua and Caleb are. In fact, they were the only two, right, that actually got into the land of all the adults. The only two that believed God, and God rewarded them. Now, the children did. What was it? I forget, under the 20 and under, something like that. I never remember whether it's 21 or 20, but somewhere in there. 20 and under go into the land with Joshua and Caleb. Now, even Moses wasn't, he was allowed to see the land, but he wasn't allowed to go in because he made a mistake. Now, catch this. Remember when God told him to speak to the rock? And if I remember right, I think he struck it. He was angry over the whole situation. That was a wrong example in front of 2 million people, because what did God want those 2 million people to see? They wanted them to see faith. And Moses is as great a man as he, and I mean that with all, he was like one of the greatest leaders. Who could lead 2 million people and keep them happy? And he certainly tried. And he was an amazing leader then. But when you're high in leadership, you have to be really careful of what you say and what you do because of the people that follow. And the mistake it became, do you realize how many funerals and how many deaths there were in the desert after that? Every adult died in the desert and was buried in that journey, except Joshua and Caleb and anyone who was under the age of whatever it was, 20. We don't sometimes realize how our words can cause others to lose hope. And one of the things I know I have to be really careful about is that I don't. You know, we just had two Bible students traveling with us this week. I was so glad to have them. They helped us with the Nerf wars, and I really needed their help this week. We just actually took them to the airport this morning on the way here. When we got our itinerary, they said, you got to take them to the airport on Sunday. I'm like, I don't know if I can do that. I got to go speak and help. And when I saw the time of the flight, I said, okay, that'll work. We'll actually, we had time to go have breakfast this morning so before we got here, because we had to get up really early. But I have to be really careful of my attitude in front of others, because when you're in any kind of, and I don't mean to say that I'm in big leader, any kind of leadership, the higher, I think, the more important, because we have to be careful that it doesn't cross the line into rebellion. And I wrote here in my notes, the act of rebellion was wrong because of the view of God it portrayed. And because sometimes our questions lead to doubt, and our doubt leads to discouragement. Discouragement can lead to rebellion. And that attacks the very character of God. That's where it gets really serious. In fact, because the character of God is what matters. God is long-suffering. He's of great mercy. He's forgiving of iniquity and transgression. We know that about the character of God. In fact, when we did a study on Jonah, I wrote this down, that the very thing that made Jonah so angry, I don't know if you remember this, but what made Jonah so angry? He was God's prophet. He was told to take a message to the Ninevites. He took the message. He didn't want to. He went the wrong direction. God changed his mind. And I think it changed my mind too if I was swallowed by a big fish and stuck inside that fish for several days. What made God so angry is that when he preached to the Ninevites, they repented. They repented. The whole city. And they got right with God. And do you remember what Jonah, it says afterwards that Jonah was so angry. And what he said, he says, I knew you would do that because you're a gracious God. He spoke about the character of God. I knew it because you're so gracious, you're so loving. I was afraid the Ninevites would get right with you and you wouldn't destroy them. I have, of course, a whole series on Jonah, and I love that series. Because God is great, and he has great character. As we close this out, there was three simple application points I made. That entering the land of Canaan is a picture of the abundant life. So some people think Canaan's a picture of heaven. I think it's a picture of the life that we could enjoy. And then I think, secondly, doubt is dangerous when it turns to rebellion. And sometimes, even as adults, we find ourselves, when I do a message on Jonah, I often say, Jonah's not the only one running from God. Sometimes we all have a little bit of Jonah in us. I think that's true. And then number three, disobedience is most serious when it attacks the very character of God. So don't be guilty of what those 10 spies came back and said. I think it's the greatest test in all the world. Do we really believe God? Do we trust him? I don't like a crisis, so to speak. I don't enjoy them. It seems like they come into my life often. I would rather live life without a crisis, without controversy. But sometimes that's where we learn the best, learn the most, the deepest truths. God takes you through a terrible trial. And if we come out right and we respond correctly, you really do come out stronger and better for it. I think of my wife and I. We've known each other a long time. The boys were asking me yesterday, you know, because they lived with us for a few days, traveled with us. Like, how long have you guys known each other? Because they first asked how long we've been married, and I had to think about that. We got married in 1977, and they said, "Well, how long have you known each other?" And I said, "Well, we started dating in high school. We met, you know, we went to the same church together. We were same class." I said, "But you actually met each other in kindergarten." And they looked at us like, for real? Were you dating then? I said, oh, yeah, of course. Of course not. We didn't even like each other in kindergarten. But somewhere we decided that we liked each other and we got married. And so you do ministry? I said, we do ministry together. Yes, we are a team. I would probably resign if I didn't have my wife. She really helps me more than anybody knows. And she is, something happened to me, I wish she could just continue with our ministry, because although that wouldn't happen, but she knows it as well as I do. She takes over a lot of different parts of it and helps me. But we can testify that God is very, very good. And he's very faithful, even sometimes when we're not. And we can trust him. And he will do what he has promised to do. So be Joshua and Caleb and give that good report. We don't always know how God's going to work it out. We don't. We face trials sometimes. We don't know how it's going to work out. But we believe and we trust. And God is good. Travis, would you like to come up and pray, close us in prayer? Would you do that for me? Thank you for letting us share the word with you. And we love you dearly. And God bless you all.